You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. This week, we dive into a subject we've not featured before. The enigmatic mysteries of crop circles. Since bursting into the public consciousness in the late 1980s, crop circles have been debated endlessly, often dismissed as nothing but hoaxes. Could just two men have been responsible for hundreds of agroglyphs appearing across the United Kingdom, and even across the world? Or are they really messages from alien visitors, yet to be decoded? Crop circle researcher Gary King, along with filmmaker Darcy Weir and disclosure advocate Stephen Bassett, join me to discuss the phenomenon, their meanings, the possible hoaxes, animal mutilation, and much more in this thought-provoking and challenging discussion. Before that though, thank you to my new patrons, Macho Sancho, Lisa Dia Castellanos, Fontium Findings, and Sarah D. I appreciate your support. If you'd like to join them for ad-free episodes, bonus content, early releases and more, then click the link in the show notes as usual to support the show for just $4 a month. Also, a big thank you to Jason, Matt B, Kimmy, Chris, Rob, HK, Susan and Amanda for their recent emails. It means a lot. You can always drop me a line via mysteriesandmonsters@gmail.com or across our social media. Mysteries and Monsters is on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or through the website, which is mysteriesandmonsters.com. Artwork for the show by Dean Bestel. The show is produced by Brennan Storr of the Ghost Story Guys, and Mysteries and Monsters is delighted to be a part of the Straight Up Strange network. Now, let's discuss the possibilities of crop circles and what they could possibly be. Today, we dive into one of the more interesting and controversial aspects of alleged extraterrestrial contact and interaction, that of crop circles. To discuss the reality of his new documentary, Crop Circle Realities, is Darcy Weir once again joining me, alongside researcher Gary King and Stephen Bassett. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. Happy to be back talking about this film.
Same here.
And for me too, pleasure to be here.
Now, obviously, Gary, you're someone I've stumbled across a few times in the past, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. You are someone I've always associated with this particular phenomenon. Now, how did you and Darcy sort of reach out? Because obviously Darcy has become quite an established filmmaker in regards to these wonderful mysteries that arrive on our shores. So what was the germination for you two to work together on this fascinating topic?
Well, I work for Jaime Maussan in Mexico City, and I've worked with Jaime as a correspondent for the Crop Circle since 2007 from the UK. And Darcy has an association with Jaime and with Jaime's son, Sebastian. And so Darcy can jump in here anytime, but he made the arrangement with Jaime to produce this documentary, which contained interviews and footage and different things that I'd done with Jaime. And it kind of went from there, really. And then when he'd finished producing it, we connected up to sort of work together to promote the film and so on and so forth.
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen some of the past films I've done with Jaime, but I did one on basically Jaime Maussan's background, a bit of a biopic on how he got into journalism and covering the UFO topic in the mainstream in Latin America. And I always wanted to cover crop circles. And interestingly enough, Jaime has been traveling to the UK to cover crop circle formations as they've shown up since at least 2007, you know, getting up in Bell helicopters and stuff like that, flying over these formations, these glyphs that have shown up in the crops. And really you know, reporting when not a lot of the media has been reporting in the past, because unfortunately, as you may know, Doug Bauer and Dave Chorley came out in 1991 really trying to debunk the whole subject and claim responsibility for all crop circles, which A, is impossible, B, is ridiculous, and C, you know, there's just so much evidence providing the argument that some of these are being created by an intelligence that's not mankind.
What I've often found very interesting, because this seems to be a phenomenon that's I've been aware of since I got into Fortean subjects and the weird and the wonderful, because it seemed to occur, or certainly seemed, Gary, you may agree with me here, that it really caught fire in the UK, sort of that balmy summer of 1989 and into the early 90s, where it seemed that every media organisation in the United Kingdom was traipsing down to the southeast and the south coast to look at the latest crop circle that had been discovered.
Yeah, I think 1990 was when it really kicked off, when the big pictogram came down in Eastfield, and then the Barbary Castle kind of triangle. Those two were the game changers. And then obviously, as we know, a year later, that's when Doug and Dave said, oh, look, it's all been a joke. We've been doing it on the way home from the pub. And, you know, I didn't get into the formations until 97. So this was history that was recounted to me by obviously reading stuff, and also people who've become my peers who were around in those days, like Michael Glickman and Karen and Steve Alexander and stuff. They told me what happened. And as a result of that pictogram, so many thousands and thousands of people descended upon Wiltshire because they thought, okay, ET's here. And then it was quickly squashed on the year later. And that sort of narrative of the man-made hypothesis has continued to this day.
Yeah, I think it is one of those aspects that, as you refer to there, Gary, it was very conspicuous, shall we say, that, as with anything, and Darcy will probably vouch for this, having done a couple of documentaries in regards to Bigfoot especially, when we always get someone who pops their head over the parapet and says, oh yeah, it's all me, I've just been doing it as a hoax, and the mainstream just seems to accept it open-armed, regardless of the fact that, as we've got here in the crop circle phenomenon, are we supposed to believe that two men have been traversing the whole of the United Kingdom? Because I think often, if you sort of have a cursory look at this subject, you suspect that they only occur in the southeast or the south coast, Gary.
No, yeah, they don't, do they?
Precisely, because I've been aware of them. I've seen them in the northeast. I've seen them in Scotland. I've seen them in Lancashire and Yorkshire as well. So clearly, there's no way that just two chaps, you know, I don't know where they've been drinking, Gary. If they're coming home, if they're coming home and they're ending up in Yorkshire, I'll have a pint of what they've been drinking. So it's often fascinating that often a hoax explanation is sometimes as ridiculous as the phenomena it's trying to explain, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, to me, it's even more ridiculous because, you know, when we questioned people like Julian Richardson back in the day and Doug and Dave and stuff, they needed help with what radius meant and what pi r squared was. And so, you know, if you've got somebody that's claiming to go out and create, you know, fantastically accurate geometric constructions, which you would need at the very least, a rudimentary knowledge of basic geometry, such as what radius means. When someone like Dr. Nick Collerstrom, the maths historian from the University of London, analyzes crop circles and says, okay, if I was teaching this to math students, with this formation, I'm at sort of degree level, and then with this formation, I'm at kind of PhD level, then we have an expert that's telling us about the intellectual profile of these people, you know, the people that would need to be, the sort of intellect they would need to possess in order to make those things. And when we question the people that claim that they do it, they simply don't have that knowledge. And then we have the other added bit. There's so many numbers of things that pile up, but one of the things that my colleague, dear colleague Michael Glickman used to say was, look, I've been an architect, I've been a professor of architecture. Things, when you make things on planet Earth, they almost never, ever, no building project ever comes in on time, and there are never, ever any building projects where you don't have mistakes. And yet we see 7,000 crop circles which are laid out not on flat ground but on uneven ground, which are geometrically perfect from the air. And if you make one mistake while you were constructing that, that's it. You don't rub it out and put and stand the crop back up again. That's it. And so there's just so many factors when you actually consider it that are reasonable and not extraordinary factors when you're not making claims that aliens are making them and so on. That really discredit the man-made hypothesis, and yet so many people are ready to embrace that without any scrutiny. That's phenomena B, as far as I'm concerned, because it's the human response to what we're seeing in the fields that is actually another mystery.
Yeah, I think just to add to that, you know, the complexities of how these crop circles are showing up. For example, people assume that these glyphs, these agroglyphs, as Stephen Bassett has named them too, they show up in multiple numbers. You know, it's not just one beautiful, incredibly geometric, precise, you know, almost looks like it's been printed into the medium of crop, multiple different types of crops, in one night. It's not just one. It might be three that show up all along the different countrysides of the UK in one night. And for, you know, a group of two men to claim responsibility for all three of those is completely bogus, because they can't even produce something so precise themselves without breaking the crop. That's another added element to this, is that some of the most complex crop glyphs that have shown up over the years, they're still growing. The crop is not damaged, and it looks like they were steamed down, almost like they laid down right at the node point of the crop, instead of being broken by force through a wood board and rope that these gentlemen discussed using to create their glyphs. The other thing is, we have evidence, you know, just through marketing, mainstream modern marketing, a beer company called Asahi from Japan, they wanted to just put their label in a field of wheat on a flat ground. And it took them 40 engineers a week long. They used satellite telemetry poles to measure distances and make sure everything looked beautiful and square from above. That took a week. That took 40 people to produce just a beer label on a flat ground. In this documentary, you might have recognized that Gary walked into one formation that showed up in, I believe it was canola, which is a flowered field of crop. And these canola stems are the size of celery stems. They're very thick.
Yeah.
Really hard medium to work with without breaking, you know. And this was also made on a hill. And from above, this looks perfectly symmetrical. How? And it's a 3D design, you know, how you could do that with a wood board and rope without breaking the stalks, you know, cleanly, without damaging the flowers on top. It's like miraculous. But again, people just think, because they took that mainstream de facto answer, oh, it's created by men. It's just not true. And there's so many things about this phenomenon that, you know, scratches the head. Why are these messages being laid, and how they're actually being laid? We don't even have the technology right now.
I mean, Stephen, you're a man who's often investigating and pulling apart the standard responses to any kind of phenomenon, as we've discussed previously. And as Darcy refers to, you've labeled these as agroglyphs. In regards to your experience and your knowledge in regards to this, what do you think is the reason for this kind of confusion that seems to be the mainstream explanation? As Darcy and Gary have said, when you really put it under scrutiny, once again, it seems to be one of these explanations that simply doesn't stand up to scrutiny.
This is the way the truth embargo works. And by the way, the UK government has been on board with the United States regarding the truth embargo on the ET issue all along, and hasn't hasn't deviated at all. In fact, it's been very quiet of late. I'm monitoring all the media out of the UK on this, and there's very little coverage in the UK. Lots happening in the US. I was pretty convinced long ago that the aggregates were non-human. It was obvious. So it posed a problem for the U.S. and the United States because it was highly visible, obviously. You know, animal harvesting has been going on for decades as well, but it's not nearly as attractive to the general public as aggroglyphs. So you got some dead cows out in the western United States, and they've been excised and drained of blood and so forth. You see occasional photo, but so that's something else. The aggroglyphs is another matter. I mean, highly visible, consistent, repeated. And so for that, it's got serious exopolitical implications. So, yeah, 80% or more of the aggroglyphs are ET. Could be 90. The number of humans willing to invest vast amounts of time in order to somehow put these things together and get them out, making zero money from it, not even having recognition because their names are not attached. They've sort of done some. They've had their day. But the idea that that's a big deal, no, it's not. I would say 80% minimum, could be 90% of all of those aggroglyphs are ETs. Now, why do I say aggroglyph? This is part of the truth embargo as well. If you are the government and you want to dissuade people from engaging something, you can threaten them. You can put them in a gulag, or you can simply undermine what they're trying to engage. In the case of the fundamental issues, sightings, the UFO acronym became the target of the ridicule. So UFO was ridiculed and demeaned by journalists, by academics, by skeptics, debunkers. The government certainly didn't get in the way of that. And so after decades of that, the term is just fundamentally disparaged. If you use it, you've labeled yourself in the minds of huge numbers of people. Mm. The moment you say UFO, you are a UFO person. Mm. Worse, you're a UFO believer. And so changing the language is important. We have to do this all the time in activism. So the new term UAP, which many of us were working to get, but eventually took a little hold and then got a real boost when I think Leslie Kane convinced Secretary Clinton to publicly make that statement on Kimmel during her campaign. The new phrase is UAP, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena. Why is it important? It's important because UAP means exactly the same thing as UFO, except UAP has been ridiculed for 60 years by the government, the truth embargo, and those that have been taken in by the truth embargo. Crop circles is somewhat similar. I don't make a big deal out of this because crop circles, that particular phenomenology is not critical to what's happening right now, to what's going down. But clearly, crop circles were ridiculed and demeaned. Also, they're not circles. There used to be some circles, but you don't see those too much anymore. The designs have gone way past that. And so aggroglyphs, there was an attempt to get that in play. Aggroglyph is more descriptive, it's more accurate, but more importantly, it hasn't had the truth embargo has not had enough time to demean that term. Again, not critical at this point, but I just mention it because the activist movement is very much about language. You use the language that reflects the truth and where you're trying to go, not the government's language. And there's all kinds of examples of this in history, and books have been written about newspeak and all of that. Governments can control you if they can control the language, even if they're not authoritarian. They can do it through other means. So the crop circle phenomena for me is, what does it have to say about the exopolitics of this? What does it have to say about ET intentions and where things are going? Does it have any impact? I don't have any pictures of crop circles in my office. I don't collect, by and large, ET-related stuff. But there are millions and millions of the photos and beautiful images on refrigerator doors all over the world. First of all, as already been noted, they really started taking off in 1990, which I've always found interesting, because that was a major milestone in, I believe, the ET connection and their the ET agenda. That was the end of the Cold War. So as the Cold War ends, and theoretically the nuclear arms threat is dramatically diminished, with opportunities for possibly resetting geopolitical relationships and moving away from trying to blow ourselves to kingdom come, a lot of optimism there. People were feeling kind of good, which is why. And because that was happening, the threat, which was always key to maintaining the truth embargo, meaning a general, admiral, captain, congressman, whatever, you keep your mouth shut about this. Don't get into this. We're facing nuclear weapons across the poles. We could all be blown to hell at any moment. This will be destabilizing. This must be kept full national security. No problem. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, the Cold War ends, different situation. This is what triggered Lawrence Rockefeller, the billionaire, who had been supporting John Mack and other and a few other people doing the research. This is early, back in the late 80s, 90s, to make the bold move to approach the new administration of 1993. And it would have been, didn't matter. He made it clear, it didn't matter who won. It could have been Bush. It could have been Clinton. To approach them with the idea of, let's get the files out. Let's bring out huge amounts of the files, get it out to the public, and basically end the truth embargo. And thus began the Rockefeller Initiative. But what happened next was, one, President Clinton got stonewalled on this. In other words, the DOD was not going to cooperate. The Air Force didn't cooperate. They basically said, you're just the president. Go away. Leave us alone. Which was, of course, violation of the Constitution and a lot of other things. So that happened. But worse, the United States in particular decided not to capitalize and take advantage of this extraordinary change in human affairs. In other words, the Soviet Union, very much because of Gorbachev, who gets not enough credit, okay? Yeah, Ronald Reagan, god of the GOP, I understand, had his pluses and minuses, but history will, I think, point out that Gorbachev was key here. Instead of taking advantage of that, we screwed it all up. And very quickly, the old way of thinking remanifested itself. And as a result, we have moved steadily since 1991 into a Cold War II. We are just as at threat of nuclear annihilation as we were in 1990 or 1980, which a lot of people say that can't be. I don't understand. Well, they're not paying attention. I get it. The Bulletin of Atomic Scientists has been monitoring the risk of nuclear war since 1947, recently put the clock, the doomsday clock, which is midnight, meaning nuclear war, the missiles are flying at 100 seconds to midnight. It's the closest it's ever been. Again, we dismiss that, right? We have other things on our mind. Always a danger. But what I'm trying to say is that while the end of the Cold War opened the door, the policies of China, United States, and Russia have maintained a new Cold War, which is making it more difficult to end this embargo. And I won't go into it further. I mean, what we did and how we conducted our affairs with respect to the Russia, it's just awful. It's just absolutely awful. But it's history now. So 1990, there's the door. It opens, and suddenly the crop circles take off. So in my mind, that is on a par with what happened in 1947. Just 60 months after we dropped the atomic bombs on Japan, killing hundreds of thousands of people, the ETs suddenly escalate their presence and start being seen all over the world. And then, of course, the fated crash in Roswell in New Mexico, where we learn without doubt that we have visitors, and they're not human, and they die. The one was still alive, and we have a craft. So at that point, the U.S. government's fully aware that there's an ET presence. Mm-hmm. That was a milestone thing. They were reacting to those bombs. That triggered something new in their agenda. And then in 1990, we have another major milestone where the Cold War ends, and then these crop circles take off and start getting progressively more complex with every year and more of them. Mm-hmm. And it continues for decades in spite of the fact that tens of thousands of people are literally going on vacation to the UK to camp out with binoculars and night vision goggles and other high-tech equipment to catch them being formed. Apparently, the ETs didn't bother them at all. Just kept putting them down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So This, to me, is a major development. It's a major and it's a positive thing, because by and large, if you look at the crop circle or the agri-grid phenomena, I'm seeing a lot of positives there. I'm not seeing a lot of threat negatives. And so that's very reassuring.
Yeah, I'll add to that. Everything about the agroglyph seems to be a peaceful message. Mm. And people will state when they hear about crop circles, well, come on, why would they make a crop circle? Why wouldn't they just land? You know, if they're here, there's a couple things about that, okay, that accusation, if you're illiterate on this subject. You know, we know since the Battle of L.A., we've been trying to shoot these things down when they approach our airspace. And there's many stories of crash craft retrievals, meaning we have shot them down to get the craft. So if you put that into perspective, they may know, you know, at the point of the 90s, that it's a no-go to land in these certain areas. And the UK is a place where we've started a communication trail. We've got a continuity of messaging going back throughout history. So why don't we just continue to send these peaceful messages? They end up on the news. People think they're beautiful. There's some hidden messaging in the formations. And, you know, you could talk about the Chobolton crop circle glyphs that have shown up that people believe are a reply to Carl Sagan's Arecibo message back in 1974. Yeah. That's a really interesting one. You know, that is peaceful, and it's basically saying, hey, we received your message. Here's our reply. This is where we're from. This is who we are. You're not alone. And, you know, Gary has done – he's walked in over 900 different crop formations that have shown up over the years. He knows what it's like to walk in these and how different the atmosphere is and how incredible these formations are, the ones that seem to be not made by man. And I'll let him talk about that for some time.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask Gary about that, because I've heard Gary speak about this phenomenon previously in regards to the emotional responses. And I know, Gary, when you were talking about your introduction into the agroglyphs or the crop circle phenomenon, you were at a point of your life where you were perhaps more open to the spiritual perceptions that are often associated with this phenomenon. Because I know I've heard you speak, when you've taken people who've never been inside a crop circle before, that they have an emotional response that varies from hysteria to acting as though they're high on drugs to having a real emotional response. So do you think that when your interest was activated in regards to this, that you were open to the possibilities? Because I know you had a deep interest in martial arts and chi primarily.
That's right. I mean, that's one of the things really which kind of reinforces the whole reality of the phenomena for me. Is my personal journey, the things that have happened to me. Okay, I'm just an ordinary guy. I tried to get rich from 20 to 30 by, you know, working in law, running my own private detective agency, and so on. Marriage kind of went on the rocks, and so I took some months off work, basically because I was depressed. And I started looking into Tai Chi again. I'd done a lot of martial arts when I was younger, and I sort of hadn't done any for 10 years. Started looking into Tai Chi and sort of yoga and bits and pieces like that. And then a series of fantastic coincidences happened, which led me to the guy who eventually took me to the crop circles. The timing in my particular circumstances was perfect for me to walk into something that I could, I guess, really find meaning for my own life in. And so there's been these two tracks that have gone along with regards to the crop circles. There's the phenomena itself and all the discussions we can have about whether it's man-made or what the designs mean and so on. But then there's this very, very personal journey, which I shared some stories about, and I've obviously kept some stories to myself because they're just very personal. But when I intertwine those two tracks of my journey and the phenomena's journey itself, then it's just off the charts incredible.
It is remarkable, like I say, and I think it's one of those things that, you know, Darcy's mentioned it as well, that if you don't really know much about this subject. You completely misunderstand a lot of what's going on, and Stevens referred to it that they're called crop circles, but the vast majority of them aren't circles. It's almost as if that there is this disparaging overview of this phenomenon that still seems to be rooted in something from 30 years ago, Gary, and it doesn't seem that anybody seems to pay any attention now or treats it with any seriousness. And as someone that's had an interest in weird phenomenon, I've noticed numerous incidents and different strands of investigation when it comes to this type of aspect of it, that you have these emotional responses that seem to move people in very different ways, regardless of what walk of life they're from. And I know when you've done some of your tours in Wiltshire and West Dorset, you will often comment on how different people react very, very differently. So is it something that still surprises you when you find people who have yet to experience something like this, Gary, that they have such an emotional response? Or, without wishing to sound churlish, is it something that you expect to happen when you take people there?
Yeah, I kind of put a different hat on when I take people on tours. You know, at first it was a very interesting psychological and sort of sociological experiment for me to be able to take different groups of people, and you know, I've had the chairman of the Bank of Mexico, I've had the chairman of Santander Bank from Colombia, I've had gurus from India, I've had actors, I've had just ordinary people, and all of them, in one way or another, have a different reaction when they go in. And I think I've been uniquely placed to be able to observe that as a sort of subcategory of the phenomenon itself. I just find that whole aspect interesting. But on your other point, there's an evolution that you go through. And some people don't make it. I would suggest many people don't make it through this kind of hurdle, where at first, when you first encounter the phenomenon and you come across the evidence which suggests that it's not man-made, you know, whether it's the lay of the crop or whatever it is, then you become a bit of a manic street preacher, and you want everybody to understand because you think this is a big turning point for humanity, like maybe we can dig ourselves out of the shit we put ourselves in and so on.
Yes.
But after so many years of that, I've watched people go through an evolution of that as well, trying to do that. Like, I've turned somebody onto them and shown them the evidence, and they've got a burst of energy and they've wanted to go and tell their friends, and then their friends give them the kind of standard response. Oh yeah, but that's all been taken care of. You know, it's two old guys, or it's this Team Satan, or it's whatever. And then they get very, very depressed that they can't recruit people, right, to be believers.
Yeah.
And that is the trap, okay? I can honestly tell you, I really don't care now whether people want to believe or not. I get invited round to dinner to some people because, like, I've turned someone onto the crop circles. They won't have a lot of information that I've got. So they invite me round for dinner, and they've got 10 of their friends round, and I find that I'm the entertainment for the evening.
Yes.
To convince them about crop circles, right? And first of all, that my friend who invited me doesn't realise how rude that is not to have told me first that, oh, but you're going to be put on the spot, right, by all these people.
Yeah.
And then secondly, you'll get someone who'll come out with the classic line and say, you believe in those, do you? Oh, go on then, convince me. And I'm like, no, thank you. You know, why on earth should I spend hours sitting here now bashing my head against the wall when you've never been in a crop circle? I've been in like 1,000. I've spent 25 years of this. I'm really not attached to whether you believe or not. You know, it's your journey. Go ahead. And that's helped me psychologically.
Yes.
In such a massive way, because otherwise you go mad. If you're like some religious preacher that needs to recruit people to believe what you believe so that you need it for yourself, when I tell you, it's the biggest gift I think anybody could ever have, is to be sure of yourself and not need other people to believe it so that you can believe it too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think often people need that for their own. It's almost as if they need it to convince themselves, Gary, as though they doubt themselves. And it feels, as you refer to there, as though it becomes a mission that they need this confirmation from others that what they believe in and what they see is right. And I think when you break through that barrier to simply not care how other people or the normal people view situations like this, I think it feels as though you've released the shackles from yourself, because you're not constrained by the parameters of normality anymore.
Exactly. It's been so liberating. It really was. It took me a few years, and then I realized the penny dropped. I thought, oh my God, I've got And this is something about kind of Buddhist philosophy, really, of non-attachment, isn't it? You know, yes. I love the phrase temporary temples, that these are like Buddhist mandalas, that they're wiped out at the end of the season so we don't get attached to them. Yes. And then there's this interpersonal non-attachment to me, thinking, look, you know, if I convince 100 people, if I convince 1,000 people, it's not going to make any difference. It's not about not caring, because I always feel uncomfortable when I say I don't care if people don't. I do care. But I'm not attached to it, and I have no desire to completely go out of my way to convince somebody of this, that, or the other. It's left me, and it's been so liberating.
Let me add some positives here, if I could, please. I'm sensing some despair. Let me give you an update. Where we're at. Again, you have to. My job is to step back from the huge painting on the wall of the gallery and take in the whole picture to try to explain what the picture is portraying. Researchers tend to get up real close to the photo and look, or the picture and the painting, and try to talk in depth about certain aspects. First of all, the agroglyph phenomenon is now accepted. It's so accepted that the coverage has almost fallen off. I monitor all the coverage in the UK and the United States on the phenomena, including agroglyphs, crop circles, what do you want to call them, UFOs, ETs, exopolyx, all of that. It's dropped off the cliff. Why? Because one reason, it's accepted. It's people, I think a lot of people may not know much, but they know, well, yeah, it happens every year, and we don't know what it is, and wow. So that's a good thing. Civilization advances. The great advances of civilization are not really democratic. We didn't move forward with astrophysics after the relativity breakthroughs of Einstein in the early 20th century because a majority of the people in a referendum voted that, yeah, this is some physics you want to look into. It's not the way it works. And so it's what is more important is, what is the status of the of that phenomena and other phenomena? Well, here's the status. One, agroglyphs, as well as animal harvesting, some used to be initially called cattle mutilation. Again, you notice the language issue there. One of the reasons that one could simply, as a matter of fact, state that they're extraterrestrial is something that people don't think about. In the 50 years since animal harvesting started being detected and then examined and studied in great detail, the United States government has never taken one step, enacted one piece of legislation, spent $1 on trying to explain why these ranchers' cattle are being drained of their blood and left dead on the ranch overnight. Nothing. Now, think about that for a second. If you were to go, or if somebody, this happens all the time, if somebody, some deranged person in a city, pick a city, doesn't matter, pick Washington, started going around, which has happened in the past, poisoning pets. They'll leave poison meat because they just don't like dogs. And they will leave some poison meat and the dogs will die. And maybe 10 or 12 dogs will turn up dead poisoned. By the time it hits 10, all hell is broken loose. You've got authorities, you've got articles, you've got posters up. We're going to find out who's poisoning these pets. $4,000 or $5,000 cows are being destroyed, drained of blood in mysterious ways. It can't be explained. Absolutely nothing. Why? Because the government knows exactly what is happening there. They know that the ETs are taking these materials from these animals, not just cattle, but primarily cattle. And there's not a damn thing they can do about it. And they can't go to the ranchers and say, you know, we're really sorry. We know that the ETs are doing this and we can't stop it. Can we write you a check? Because the rancher is going to go to the paper and say, wait a minute, I got some government people telling me. So the government does nothing. In other words, it's the dog that didn't bark. Oliver Wendell Holmes, the dog that didn't bark. The government should have been acting on that. Let's talk about agroglyphs. Year after year after year, somebody's going into private property, laying down a whole bunch of crop. Now, as it happens, there's not a lot of destruction, but that's not immediately obvious, and there is some loss. It is disturbing. Let me tell you something. If a bunch of college kids went out and started setting crosses on fire in the middle of farmers' fields every season, you know, One here, one there, one there. I assure you, the UK government and the police would have a massive manhunt out. We will find these people. This is unacceptable. You cannot do that. It violates our norms, blah, 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 blah. They've done nothing on this issue. Why? Because they fully know it's extra-trust drill. And so they can't do anything. And so the very absence of government response to the agroglyphs and to the animal harvesting for a reasonably logical person that studied a bit of logic in high school or college is all you need to know, that not only it's extra-trust drill, but the government knows it. So that's one way to look at it. Another point, the phenomenon is falling off. The coverage of crop circles has fallen off. I believe the number of crop circles being put down has fallen off. This does not surprise me, because based on what's going down, this is what I would expect. If I'm right that the explosion of the crop circles and agroglyphs and their development over the decades after 1990 is corresponding to an extraterrestrial agenda, which I think is starting to manifest, then at this point you would likely see that phenomena taper off. I'm not aware of where the status is on animal harvesting, and nor am I aware of the status on, quote, contact or abduction activity, because the resources are simply not there to monitor these things. I would bet that they are also falling off. So what is my point? My point is that this journey that began in 1947 is finally coming to an end, this particular part of our journey. Meaning, the extraterrestrials elevated their action based upon our development of atomic bombs. They have pushed disclosure process by their presence, by being seen, by their activities, and in other ways, including incredibly overacts such as turning off our nuclear weapons repeatedly, which I think is a little more profound than, say, a agroglyph or a dead cow. And that has helped to drive a massive citizen science research journalism effort. And the reason I say citizen is because the government is not doing anything publicly, though I'm sure they're researching the hell out of this in deep classified programs, but just regular people, a lot of retired military, no money, spending their own money, writing the books, doing the research, covering the sightings, creating the journals, joining the organizations, making documentaries for not years, but decades, thus making it impossible for the UK government or the United States government to just pretend it isn't happening and not worry. They thought they got a break when they closed down Blue Book and destroyed NICAP back in the late 1960s, but it didn't work out that way. And so these people, Darcy is one of them, Brian is one of them, I'm one of them, I can name all my colleagues, and many more, many now dead, they are the ones that simply could not let this go. And how could they? They figured out there's an extraterrestrial presence. They figured out the government is not going to confirm that to them. And that is not something you can say, well, what the hell? A lot of people can, but believe me, many thousands could not. And so they've pushed the issue. The ETs continue their activity. And finally, we had a breakthrough. We crossed the Rubicon. There's no going back. From here, it's right to the finish line. And that breakthrough was the TTSA announcement of 2017, the launch of the TTSA and the New York Times articles. Since then, there has been a cascade of developments, all of which are pointing to the fact that we're approaching the end of this period, this adventure. And the end of this adventure will result in disclosure by the heads of state, starting with probably Biden. I'm sure that Johnson will follow suit within 48 hours. All right. So that's where we're heading. Now, what are the other indicators? Oh, the debunkers and the skeptics can't be found. They barely exist. They don't turn up on television. They're not writing articles. Occasionally, there's some tweets. There's a couple I have in mind, a couple of Phil class wannabes, but they're going nowhere. They're not being brought on to debate the researchers. They stepped down because most of them knew that the ET presence was real, but they enjoyed having fun with the UFO, quote, believers, because it got them views, got them some attention. But now that's not working for them anymore.
People
so
like
happened.
A good fight, you know?
Sure. Well, yeah, you and him fight. So then over the last 3 years, we've seen a rolling process in which one person after another is coming forward and basically signing up on what is going down. A few recent examples. Recently, it was revealed that one of our destroyer groups, they're very, very powerful ships, by the way. You don't want to screw with our destroyers, has been plagued by swarms of drones.
Mm.
Okay. Now, 25 years ago, that goes nowhere. Okay. Now, today, so you have to imagine this now. You've got powerful U.S. destroyers, a group of them, in the Pacific, off the coast of California, out at sea. You know what out at sea means. And there's drones flying around. So you can pretty much eliminate some college kids having a prank. You know, they got a speedboat and kind of headed on out there, got as close to the destroyers as they can, launched a bunch of drones. Yeah. And they're sitting there with beers, you know, and some pizza, and they're just flying these drones around the destroyer for fun. You can eliminate that.
Yeah.
Secondly, you can eliminate foreign activity. Chinese, Russian. In other words, the Chinese submarine could surface, launch 25 drones, then submerge, and then remotely control these things and fly them around our destroyers. Why can you eliminate that? I assure you that any captain of a destroyer, commander of a destroyer in the Navy, has drones flying around it and takes no action to stop it, to bring them down, would be done. He would be cashiered. He would be out of the Navy. His career would be over. Our ships do not let things like that get close to them, period. And that includes boats, right? You know what they do with that? Occasionally happens. They have 50 caliber and higher guns, and they basically sink the boat. So they did nothing. They made no effort to stop these drones from flying around their battle destroyers. Wow, well, that's interesting. Because if they were our adversaries, they would have shot them down. And then filed a massive complaint with the Chinese ambassador. So what does that leave? Well, interestingly enough,
UFOs, UAP.
The chief of naval operations, Admiral Michael Gilday, because of the way things are these days, was contacted by one of our citizen journalist operations, The Drive, and their war zone, which is the section where they devote to this phenomenon brilliantly, I should ask. And they ask him about it. And again, 25 years ago, nothing is going to happen. Now they got a response. What did the good admiral, the chief of naval operations of the United States of America, say? Asked by Jeff Schrogel of Task and Purpose if the Navy positively identified any of the aircraft involved. Aircraft, drones, again, it's not really, people say drone. They don't have to be drones. They could have been something else, but drone kind of describes it, but not really. Mm. What does he say? He says, no, we have not identified. I am aware of those sightings, and it's been reported there have been other sightings by aviators, he didn't have to offer that, in the air, and by other ships, not only of the United States, but of other nations, and of course, other elements within the U.S. Joint Force. Let me be clear. That statement absolutely never happens prior to 2017.
Let me bring it back just a bit.
Sure.
To crop circles. Like, what is that connection there? Well, if you watch the film, I don't know if you had time, Paul, but
yes.
There's very clearly been UFO or paranormal events. In particular, Gary King himself witnessed the 777 event, where a flash of light happened in, you know, midnight around 3:30 in the morning, pitch dark. And as the sun came up, they saw this 1,033-foot crop circle design. They were the first people to walk into it. And there was no sign of human interaction in East Field. There was no lights, people with headlamps and stuff on constructing this thing. It just appeared, you know, in this short amount of time. And we also cover the Oliver Castle incident, where we see these orbs, you know, floating over the crop as this apparent design gets laid out. And Gary King has met the people that saw that video initially when it was on a mini DV cam, you know, shot by Jonathan Wiley from Australia, one of these travelers that's come over during the crop circle season in 1996. You know, and additionally to that, in history, if we look at the Devil Shall Mow story that was printed on, you know, the early printing press in 1649 in the UK, in this same area where crop circles are showing up consistently, apparently in that story, they saw balls of fire over the crops that night. You know, so what are these orbs? What are these balls of fire? These are UFOs.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's a very famous incident from Australia, the Tully incident, which I think is probably the most famous example of this phenomenon in Australia. Once again, we had a shape formed in the crop, and a witness saw something levitating above the ground and flying off. And because often I think this phenomenon is, people will always say, oh, well, it only happens in the UK. And that's simply not true either. You know, these are reported all around the world. Australia, Canada, America, Germany, France, Japan. And like you say, Darcy, a lot of them, we do get witnesses who see either bright flashes of light, balls of light, objects flying around. There is some kind of connection, not to all of them, but then again, not all of them are witnessed being created either. A lot of them are discovered perhaps the day after or a couple of days after, and I'm sure Gary will refer to that as well. You know, the chances of being in the right place at the right time are extremely small, but these incidents do happen. And once again, you have to look at the same kind of thing as Stephen referred to there with cattle mutilations, that there will be reports of lights being seen in the sky and then something happening. So clearly there is something that connects all these aspects together, for whatever reason it is and whatever message they are trying to get over to us, as Stephen points out in regards to the general phenomenon. The majority of it is a very peaceful, beautiful piece of artwork, one could say, and as many people do have these pictures on their walls, on their fridges, as their screensavers, whatever. They are stunningly beautiful, and I've seen many images that are quite breathtaking. So there is clearly something that connects these aspects. The question is, what is it that connects these dots and these...
Extraterrestrials is what connects it. Period.
Absolutely.
It's no longer debatable. Mm. It's an absolute, solid, irrefutable fact. Only debated because the government says no. There's nothing there. The government's lying. Mm. Now it's up to the people. Over the history, you've had governments and you've had kingdoms that have lied to their people. And when the people buy the lie, bad things happen. When the people reject it, they can move forward. The United States has not yet accepted this truth. They are buying into the government's lie. And the things that are happening around that are threatening the entire human race. This is a really big deal. It is extraterrestrial. And the perspective you want is it could be as simple as this. The extraterrestrials are going about their business. They're going about their business. They're not screwing around. They're not playing. This isn't a holiday for them. They have they clearly have an agenda, multiple agendas. And we're trying to understand that as best we can. I think the government knows more about that. But agendas they have. And so they have a reason for putting those agroglyphs down. They have a reason for taking that material from cattle and other animals. They have a reason for contacting and even abducting human beings. They have a reason for flying in the South Pacific near our carrier groups. They are going about their business. We, on the other hand, are running around in circles in the dark, stubbing our toes on the furniture, being made fools of by our own government, but doing the best that we can. Okay, now we need to ratchet it up. We need to take it up another level. Now, in the last year or so, the UK has simply closed down. Again, I follow the media. The coverage in the UK has fallen off, and what coverage does take place is almost all about the United States. The UK government is virtually stepped aside completely, or let me put it this way. Nobody's coming forward. There's no activity there. I believe the reason for that is the UK government knows what's going down here and is deferring to us. In other words, we're going to get out of the way. Mm. We know what you're doing, United States, and so we're going to step aside because we really can't do this. And you've got a tough job there. You've got pandemics and crazy politics and insurrections and everything else. But nevertheless, the ET issue must go forward, and it will. Mm. And again, I can't overstate the change. 5 days ago, an op-ed in the Washington Post about this issue. Mm. An op-ed written by Daniel Dresner, a professor of international politics at Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. This is something, haven't seen much of that over the last 70 years. And among many, many other things, he refers to something here in the article. Furthermore, it might be better for U.S. national security if these UAPs turn out to be ETs, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, the ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, told the New York Post. Frank, again, this is just 6 days ago. Frankly, that if it's something from outside this planet, that might actually be better than the fact that we've seen some technological leap on behalf of the Chinese or the Russians. That absolutely is the case. Or some other adversary that allows them to conduct this activity. So Marco Rubio, one of the most powerful people in the Republican Party, who intends to run for president, has basically just pointed out it's probably best if these ETs are friendly, thus kind of diminishing the threat scenario that's always in play. And that was 6 days ago. And then, right, about the same time frame, the former head of the CIA, who has a history with this issue but has denied it, and we know something about that, we're talking about James Woolsey, the former head of national intelligence for President Trump. I'll get to Woolsey in a second. So he's interviewed on Fox News, which is taking an interest in this issue, particularly Tucker Carlson. But Maria Bartiromo gets a hold of John Ratcliffe, who's now out of government. He's not in that position anymore. But still, I think he wants to have a future. And being a former Trump top official probably hasn't helped his prospects. Nevertheless, he says this to her. There are a lot more sightings than have been made public. Oh, really? Ratcliffe said. Some of those have been declassified. And when we talk about sightings, we are talking about objects that have been seen by the Navy or Air Force pilots or have been picked up by satellite imagery that frankly engage in actions that are difficult to explain, movements that are hard to replicate, that we don't have the technology for, or traveling at speeds that exceed the sound barrier without a sonic boom. This is a man who was the head of national intelligence for the United States just 6 months ago. And then James Woolsey, they get him on a record again. Now, he has always been a problem. And yet, here's what he said to the New York Post. There have been over the years, now, events of one kind or another, usually involving some kind of aircraft-like airframe, Woolsey said. I never thought there was anything to all this. It always seemed pretty far out to me. That's a lie. All right. I know Woolsey's history on this, but whatever. He was absolutely a truth embargo guy. And then, boom. But there was one case in which a friend of mine was able to have his aircraft stop at 40,000 feet or so and not continue operating as a normal aircraft, continued, adding that the source was someone he respects. What am I trying to get across here? I'm trying to get this across to anybody that wants to listen. The truth embargo is ending. People are coming forward to try to get positioned on it, to try to say something that shows they're not completely idiots and have been living in a cave throughout their entire career. It's coming to an end. The media is moving in. The debunkers are moving out. And where it's going is congressional hearings in the United States. Those hearings have been prepared for. The witnesses have been lined up. Committee chairs have been briefed. I'm about 95% I'm 100% confident on the witnesses. 90% confident that a decent number of the key committee chairs, say a half dozen, have been briefed. And the only thing that's preventing these hearings from happening tomorrow is the United States is still going through some rather grotesque political upheaval. Bizarre, unprecedented, bad. We're trying to kind of work past it. It's dominating the news. And the pandemic, not quite over. New surges. Brazil, Bolsonaro, one of the great villains of the 21st century, go down in history, hated, literally is slaughtering his own people. And that's going to possibly spread more variants. So that's the complicating factor. But be assured, in due course, those hearings are going to begin and the embargo is going to end. And then, in the aftermath of the formal acknowledgement, we can start asking the UK government, okay, now the UK government's got a tough spot here. It's gone along with the US embargo for 70 years. Boris has only been part of that for a short amount of time, but nevertheless, a good while. And so the question is, Boris, did you know there was an extraterrestrial presence? What is he going to say? Yeah, clueless, had no idea. I just didn't notice anything. I heard there were some, I don't know, Doug and Dave were putting some things down in the crops. I had no idea. In which case, he is labeled by history as a complete and total blithering idiot for all time. So he's going to have to say, yes, I knew. And then, well, what about the crop circles? What about the agroglyphs? What do we know about that? Yes. We've known they could put them down in less than 5 minutes or less anytime they wanted to. We have actually some surveillance film of that from our very high-tech cameras, better than yours. And we will present that to you in the future. And just multiply that by 100 instances. That's what's coming. Right? That's why things are getting heavy. That's why I'm talking at this level right now. I am deadly serious. This is almost over. And while the research should go on and the docs should go on, people need to prepare for the fact that as it happens, they took their vitamins, they took care of themselves, they are going to live to see and have to deal with the formal confirmation of the ET presence and whatever the post-disclosure world is going to bring.
Gary, what do you think about the actual crop circles and what they reveal in their design and why they might be coming to the UK, for example, over the years?
Oh, that's a multi-answer question there. Well, number one, why the UK? My belief is that it's a context. There's a large amount of context in the location. Number one, Stonehenge, Avebury, the mysteries of why our ancestors chose to build these stone circles and mysterious monuments that contain the same implicit geometry that we find inside the crop circles. Yep. So we have a mystery from our ancestors from the past, coupled with a mystery of the present. The area of the Salisbury Plain, that area is where we first began to farm in the United Kingdom. It's the area where we cleared some trees and started to grow crops and transitioned from hunter-gatherer to animal husbandry and plant husbandry. Although agriculture had started in other parts of the world, obviously, before, it's where it started there. But it's from there that Britain grew to become the largest empire. It was the creator of wealth. It was the creator of surplus. And Britain managed to succeed in the empire race between the Spanish and the others, I would suggest. I mean, they all got their slices of the cake around the world. Mm. But English is the language of commerce. English is the language of business, in other words. And, you know, the empire, this little tiny island with its banking interest, the Bank of England, has become, you know, hugely influential and wealthy. And it led to the slave trade. It led to all the different things that have happened. And where we currently are now, living our lives, where we are told that the only meaning for our lives is to sell each other stuff, to participate in an economy with money, which is an imaginary concept, and the economy. We were told we'd move from feudalism to capitalism, and it would give everybody a chance to participate in an equalized kind of, you know, the difference between the elites and the common people. Well, that hasn't worked. And we're all defining our lives by what came out of the economics of Adam Smith and all the other people that kind of got built up from what was the wealth, the original wealth, which began in nature. So I believe that holds a massive context for what the crop circles are. And then if I look at the symbols themselves, we have philosophical and religious symbols. We have geometry, which is also, if you go back to the ancient Greeks, related to us inquiring about is the cosmos just this random accident, or is it intelligently designed? And if it's intelligently designed, what is our place here? What is our humanity's role? Well, when we compare it to what we're doing now, you know, we sell each other rubber dog turds from Japan if we can make a profit on them. I would suggest that for the miracle that is creation, the miracle that our tiny little part of this particular solar system, it has all the right parameters and all the right conditions for us to be able to have this conversation and have conscious awareness and scratch our heads and ask questions about it, that maybe the meaning to life is more than selling each other stuff.
I think there's one other aspect as well about this phenomenon that I've not touched on yet. And I don't know if this kind of research is going on, Gary, so you'll be able to sort of shed some light on this. Now, I was aware back in the day when I first became aware of crop circles and the phenomenon. In regards to some of the work, I believe one of the key proponents of this at the beginning of this kind of research was a gentleman called Arthur Shuttleworth, who was working in regards to harmonics and noises that were being recorded inside circles. Is that research still going on, and are we still getting those kind of results? And if so, what does that add to this mystery? Why are we able to record these strange noises inside certain circles?
I mean, Arthur Shuttleworth was a journalist, wasn't he? He covered the the Warminster thing and wrote an excellent book about you know, several excellent books about that whole mystery. And also his books were also very detailed in how the public was responding and how the intelligence services were responding to cover it up and so on. So his participation was excellent. There have been a number of people that have come along, obviously, and that's what we need. We need people with different ideas to come along and say, well, maybe if we poke around with this particular piece of equipment and find out if there's infrared, or find out if there's harmonics, or find out if there's sound and all the rest of it. Invaluable research. To my knowledge, no one's currently doing that, although you saw people walking around with instruments on their head, with little rods coming out of their hand, you know, that they were waving around to pick up one thing or another. And some people got some interesting results. For me, it didn't really, to me, that was kind of like, you know, a fuzzy picture in the dark sky of, like, there's a UFO. It's something which adds to the argument, although they can't be man-made because we've detected these things in them. Mm. And it addresses that argument. Whereas when you actually look at the message, you actually look at the geometry, or you actually look at the content of the symbols, you'll find it a great deal more if you're examining what their message is. I've often used this analogy where I say, you know, if you lived in a street or an apartment block and you woke up in the morning and during the night someone pushed a card under your door with this mysterious symbol on it, and when you stepped outside, all the neighbours had one too, and then you said, well, let's check CCTV. Who the hell delivered this? And you check CCTV and you can't find nothing, and then the next night another five things are pushed under your door, and it goes on for years and years. Do you keep asking who the postman is, or do you eventually start saying, I wonder what these symbols mean? And to me, that's where the richness has come from, working with people like John Michel and John Martineau and Alan Brown and Michael Glickman, and finding these solutions to squaring the circle and understanding, for example, that, you know, the Earth and the Moon. What are the chances that the Earth and the Moon are an 11-3 ratio and they perfectly square the circle? When you draw it, if you bring the Moon down out of the sky figuratively and sit the Moon on top of the Earth, the combined radius of the Earth and the Moon form exactly, you draw a square around the Earth and then you put a circle through the center of the Moon, perfect squared circle. You find exactly the same solution in Stonehenge. They're clearing the Amazon rainforest now, which they said, no, there were no human inhabitants before 13,500 years ago. Now they're reluctantly, the archaeologists are saying, oh, maybe there were people there 130,000 years ago. And then because Bolsonaro, who Steve mentioned earlier, is the maniac who's clearing the Amazon, they're finding monuments which squared the circle.
Yeah.
This was clearly very important to humanity, although we can't get our heads around what it means and what it understands today without some research. And the crop circles for 25 years have been bashing us on the head with squaring the circle, squaring the circle, squaring the circle. We cannot dismiss that message.
I think it's one of those things, is that, are we still sort of trying to translate these symbols, Gary, or have we kind of just started to just accept them, as you refer to there? Do you just accept what's going on and deal with it, or are we still trying to think, what does this mean? Why is this symbol here? Why have we found this symbol?
Well, you know, it depends. For me, Michael and some other colleagues, Karen Alexander, you know, work very hard with the geometry. And we look at crop circles and scratch our heads and take our time and think, right, what's hidden in there? What's this showing us? And let me give you an example. In 2002, there was a formation at Crooked Solly. It only was there for one night because when Steve Alexander flew over it in the morning, the farmer was already harvesting the field. Okay. This crop circle had a 200-foot standing crop diameter circle in the center. And then around that standing circle, it had a mitochondrial DNA strand Now, mitochondrial DNA only comes from the woman. It only passes from, you know, women to women. It's not something that we pass on. So theoretically, mitochondrial DNA goes all the way back to the primordial Eve. Now, that mitochondrial DNA was made up of 792 individual standing squares, and 504 of those squares had been flattened to actually make the gaps in between so that you could see that it was a DNA spiral. Okay, now 792, the diameter of our planet Earth is 7,922 miles in diameter, and the combined radius of the Earth and the Moon is 5,040 English miles, 504. So this crop circle, it not only encoded the measurements in the English miles, and metrology is a big subject that we've largely forgotten. We've all been confused with meters and centimeters and converting it from inches, and we've forgotten what metrology is really about. But this contained the measurements of the planet, the Earth and the Moon, which squares the circle. It contains a mitochondrial DNA, which talks about the original Eve going right the way back. And then when you look at the location, there was a small book that's written about this by Alan Brown and John Michel. The coincidences of the exact location of where this was, it was right in the center of Upper East Farm and Lower East Farm, Upper King's Copse and Lower King's Copse. It was a perfect yin yang of duality that was all around this crop circle. It was a wealth. Now, when we find treasures like that, which we found numerous, we know that they're trying to tell us something about ourselves and about the human condition and about geometry. But it's hard to get that penny to drop in other people without them actually absorbing the information that we've kind of gone through.
Yeah. I think, Darcy, for you, with this subject, I suspect the biggest issue you had with your film was trying to fit as much as you possibly could, because as Gary refers to and as Stephen does, there are so many little offshoots and facets of this that I suspect you could probably make another 10 of these and you wouldn't cover everything you needed to or wanted to.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And maybe I will make a follow-up to this film.
Good.
Of course, with the help of Gary. I mean, Gary has just produced, I think, 20 episodes for Gaia Entertainment on the crop circle phenomenon and a History Channel special. I think they're in Spanish because he does his work for Jaime Maussan. But, you know, to get those in English would be great. I think there's definitely some use there because, again, this phenomenon to me is underrepresented. It's dismissed even by people in the UFO research field, you know, because it's been so well debunked by the mainstream and people don't question it as much as carriers off the coast of the Pacific being swarmed by UAPs or UFOs. You know, people question that, but they don't question the crop circle phenomenon. And I wonder why, when there's been such a rich history of these glyphs showing up. And like you said, even Australia, they're showing up in France, Germany, many, many other places, but the vast majority of them still show up. And I equate that to a continuity of messaging in the UK.
There's another take you can make about this, the question being, why the UK? Let me throw this out as a possibility. The 164 episodes of Ancient Aliens have been religiously maligned by the academic community since the day they started, and I get that. It literally drives the academics insane. However, I believe that history will show that a great deal of the work and the concepts that were put forward in that series are going to prove to be true. So what am I getting at? ETs have been plus once you are convinced and know that ETs are here now, the idea that they were here in past times it's almost a certainty. So yes, they have come and gone, and the types that may have visited in the deep past may not be the same as today, but ETs are ETs in that regard. And when they engage the planet, say 5,000, 7,000, 10,000 years ago, they don't just come down and I don't know, do a world tour, right? Okay, we've got seven continents. We've got to hit every area of those continents. We've got 2 years to do this. Let's get cracking. No, they come down and they engage a particular group of human beings, undoubtedly because of certain development going on there, what's happening. And we have records of this that are clearly emerging out of the evidence. So they have come down and visited certain places. I believe one of those places was the United Kingdom, which back then was not an island, as I think you know. It was connected to Europe. And the fact that they came down, and Ancient Aliens just touched on this, and engaged whoever was there somehow. They were seen, they were known, might have engaged them. These round craft coming down, they started to be mythologized and incorporated into the peoples of the UK at that time. And it manifested in circles. The stone circles, I believe, is a connection to the ET presence. That was their way of kind of responding to that. And there are similar examples around the world. But this is a strong one. And again, a strong civilization, very, very clearly important to the development in that part of the world. But of course, they've been to Africa. They've been to Asia. But I think that's the connection. They have visited there before. There is that. And they come back and they're focusing on that spot. And it is messaging, as Garcia says. Dropping circles all over the world is not good messaging. They only need to do it in one place. The number of agroglyphs in the UK, it far exceeds everything that's been done anywhere else in the world. And when you get away from the UK and go off to pick any country, pick any continent, people could get together and go out and have weeks to create an agroglyph of some kind or another, and nobody's even going to know. And the temptation is obviously intense. And so, yeah, they did that. Some of them made donuts in the beach with their Porsche. The point is that the actual number, the percentage of human-made, quote, agroglyphs of any type outside of the UK is, I think, very, very high, whereas the percentage in the UK is very low. And so, again, messaging, continuity, absolutely. They want to get something across. I know people that have spent decades researching this stuff, and they've enjoyed the hell out of it. I'm a very lazy guy. I'm just going to wait and ask the TETs, what was that about? What was going on there? You know, could you tip us off? And I think they'll tell us. I think in an open contact era, the ETs will be happy to explain what was going on in the UK, and that will be a fun thing. And hopefully we'll all live to see that, and your podcast will still be operating.
Where can everybody find the film, keep up to date, and follow your work after this fascinating topic and another brilliant film in your repertoire, Darcy?
Thank you, Paul. It's occultjourneys.com. My film is up there, the trailer, and if you click on the poster, it'll take you through to a site to stream it. It's also available on Dish Network and a bunch of cable and satellite networks. And yeah, Gary, where can they follow you, man?
So I've got a YouTube channel which I've got some videos on, drone footage I've taken, different crop circle analysis. It's called Against the Grain. And a Facebook page, a private Facebook group, which anybody's welcome to join, also called Against the Grain. Number of contributors, you know, that post different things about crop circles, including myself, photographs and analysis and so on. So they can find me there.
My website is paradigmresearchgroup.org. In the issues section of TTSA Media, To the Stars Academy Media section, and in the print media archive, you can find huge amounts of material regarding everything that I said today about what's going down. And you can subscribe to my newsletter there, free. And please follow Paradigm Research Group on Twitter and Facebook. I'd be appreciative. Thank you.
Brilliant. Well, listen, the best of luck with it. Gary, it's been a pleasure to finally get a chance to speak with you again, and I hope one day we get a chance to have another conversation. Darcy, it's always a pleasure. And Stephen, thank you, as always, for pushing the boundaries and keeping on doing what you're doing, gentlemen. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Thank you. We'll be right back.